Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's trending?
Number one on What's Trending, postseason baseball continues wild card action. Of course, we could have all the series wrap up today. Hopefully not. I'd like somebody to force a game three of the wild card. First game up again today. Tigers, Guardians, about ready to get going here about 10 minutes from now. The Tigers did win yesterday. The Padres need a win to stay alive against the Cubs today. Red Sox could get the series win today against the New York Yankees and Carlos Rodon. And then the late game tonight, Dodgers looked dominant against Cincinnati yesterday. We'll see if that's the case. Yamamoto on the mound. The Dodgers, the late one at 8:09, first pitch this evening out west.
Obviously, love some playoff baseball. A couple of close games yesterday. Shohei Ohtani is very good.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if anybody knew that, but Shohei Ohtani is pretty good. Next up on What's Trending, the Cleveland Browns announced that even though they are overseas and he was only a third-round pick, Dylan Gabriel will make the start for them this upcoming weekend, meaning Joe Flacco will be the backup. Sanders will stay as the third-string quarterback as of right now, in what they're saying. So Dylan Gabriel is going to make his first career NFL start in London. Wait, London, right? That's where they are.
Yeah. And Jaden Daniels reportedly medically cleared to practice today for the Commanders, which is a good sign if you want to see the Chargers have to face Jaden Daniels. Elsewhere on What's Trending, the NCAA announced, Drew, you'll like this, the 2028 Women's Final Four will take place at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. It'll be the first time the Women's Final Four will be in an active NFL venue in over 20 years. Good. Remember, for the Women's Final Four, they've been having these in much smaller venues. They're going back to the NFL-sized venue for the Women's Final Four.
That's very cool. And he's a good spot for it. Obviously, they've had a women's basketball resurgence with Caitlin Clark coming to town. And they were just in the conference finals. They just lost, didn't they? Last night?
Unfortunately, lost overtime. Last night in game five.
They were without half their squad, too. So honestly, impressive.
Remarkable job.
They were able to make it that far, if we're being honest. Next up on What's Trending, speaking of the WNBA, Nafisa Collier's comments on the WNBA commissioner, Kathy Engelbert, are currently holding a little bit of
crazy
weight. This is what she had to say about a conversation they had between the two of them.
So first of all, I'd like to congratulate the Mercury for advancing to the finals. And I want to be clear, this conversation is not about winning or losing. It's about something much bigger. The real threat to our league isn't money. It isn't ratings or even missed calls or even physical play. It's the lack of accountability from the league office. Since I've been in the league, you've heard the constant concerns about officiating, and it has now reached levels of inconsistency that plague our sport and undermine the integrity in which it operates. Whether the league cares about the health of the players is one thing, but to also not care about the product we put on the floor is truly self-sabotage. Year after year, the only thing that remains consistent is the lack of accountability from our leaders.
She also said
She also said that Caitlin Clark should thank her lucky stars that she even has the WNBA to play in. I was like, oh, that's who you want to attack?
Yeah, she said she should be grateful she makes $16 million off the court, because without the platform the WNBA gives her, she wouldn't make anything, and also that only losers complain about the refs.
Yeah, just for context, that
this is the WNBA commissioner.
The player is saying the commissioner told her
that. This is the commissioner.
She said that she didn't like the way that their conversation was characterized, although she did not say that those are not things she didn't say. I think they got a real leadership issue. I've never seen in a league a player just go after the commissioner. Like,
they're also due to have a potential strike going into this. There might not be a WNBA season next year.
I think that would be extremely damaging for everybody involved, though. I'll be like, as much as it sounds like this commissioner needs to be out.
She needs to resign.
I will say, though, for the players, I don't think a strike is doing you guys any good either. It's a really tough spot.
When your league is growing, it is the worst time to do it. Like, I just saw, for instance, baseball's numbers, watching is up. All the primetime stuff is up. Attendance was up for the third straight year. So, like, baseball's heading a good way. Might be a bad time to not play games, same as the WNBA. Don't miss time when you're growing.
Lastly, on What's Trending, you guys probably saw the news yesterday, and certainly if you were in Jackson County, you had an opportunity to vote on the issue. That was, of course, the recall election of County Executive Frank White. He was recalled yesterday, overwhelmingly, not in his favor. 85% voting yes to recall him.
I was like, could you imagine that, like, if we had to do, like, if there was a recall vote for the midday show? And, like, some of you probably don't like this show, but there was a recall vote. And 85% of you are like, get Cody off of this show. 85%? I can accept if 40% of you hate me. 60% even. 85% of people disliking the job you're doing.
But we were having a conversation after the show with some other people in the building, and it's true. For a recall election, the people that are going out to vote, you're probably more likely to go out to vote if you're trying to remove him from office than you also are if you were trying to keep him from getting recalled. Like, you know what I mean? Especially on in a recall election, not a normal general election or something like that. Anyway, so he's recalled. We can talk more later today or in the coming weeks about, does this play any role at all now on stadium stuff or anything like that? I don't know if, you know, I would think that, you know, one or if not both the organizations have kind of moved on from that anyway in terms of his hurdles. I think they've, you know, we already knew the reports right after. The vote failed as well, that, you know, the Royals were going to, you know, bypass Jackson County Legislature and just work with the city if they want to stay in KCMO. Obviously, we know they're considering the Kansas site there off of Null in Overland Park / Leawood. So we'll see. But that is what's trending here on Cody Engel. Don't forget, on Wednesdays, our lunch partner, our friends over at Jefferson's. It is football season. There's also a playoff baseball going on, and there's no better place to watch your favorite teams or watch some playoff baseball than Jefferson's. Great daily specials, great happy hour. Locations in Lenexa, North KC, Lawrence, Topeka, and in Joplin. You can bring your friends and family out to Jefferson's for the ultimate game day experience. Jefferson's wings, burgers, oysters, and if you want some of those, how about we give you a shot at a $50 gift card?
Nice and easy.
Right now, let's do caller 12.
Sure.
I wasn't going to do 85.
Why 12?
I don't know. I just random number.
Ryan Blaney. There we go. NASCAR driver number 12.
Sure. Yep. Yep. 913-586-7.
He definitely did it for Ryan Blaney.
NASCAR was just here this past weekend.
A driver I've definitely heard of.
Yeah. So Drew will take care of that. 12th caller getting hooked up with a $50 gift card. Thanks to Jefferson's.
It's someone's just like, it's so crazy to be so universally hated. Do you know
what
hard it is to be?
180. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
he had been
on his legacy and everything.
One of the best, like, local kid, rises to prominence, Royals Hall of Famer, all-time great, statue out in center field, right? I mean, he was like, you know, and then does some political stuff in town and represents the city and lives in the city. It all seemed like, yes, these are nice things. And then within a year and a half, between the property tax stuff, the stadium stuff, and anything else in between and all the infighting, he got 85% of a recall vote. I'll tell you this much, it can't hurt the stadium conversations, because everybody was all but saying Frank White was a huge part of the initial part of the conversations when they were trying to figure out where to put the initial stadium, that he was one of the people getting in the way of the Royals putting the stadium where maybe they kind of wanted and these others and funding and everything else.
We're obviously having it on the stadium convo. I think we all fully recognize that the biggest issue for him was the property tax disaster.
Sure. For that, voters, absolutely.
Know, on this show, we've talked about it more, and of course, the stadium. Although, the property tax issue also, I think, hurt the stadium vote for all the other million reasons that went wrong with that campaign, and the teams are to blame for that as
sometimes
well, as
to
much
ask
as anybody.
To tax somebody more when my house cost, you know, triple what it did before in taxes. Yeah. That absolutely hurt the stadium stuff. It all is connected, so we'll see, I guess. He has, and somebody pointed out, he's asked the Missouri Supreme Court to vacate it. I don't think he's going to get anywhere on that one. I mean, look, they took it to a public vote. Sometimes you just got to, like, accept it, I guess is what it is. Like, if I were Frank, I'd just work on whatever the next chapter is for me. But, like, on this one, you're probably just going to have to accept it. Like, and I know that you didn't up to this point, because you could have, like, the second that they got the recall thing on the ballot, you knew you were done. You could have, you know, you could have resigned or done a million other things. He's going to fight this thing to the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the stadium stuff. We'll see. We'll, We know on the Kansas side, the star bond deadline is the end of the year. So we'll see if we get anything. I think we both agree that
October 1st, man.
The Chiefs, I don't think we're going to hear anything for much longer.
No.
Royals, maybe something sooner. We'll see.
I hope so. I should ask her. I haven't asked her out in months because I didn't care to figure it out anymore. Tell me in a little bit, I guess, whether it happens.
My guess is we would hear more on the Royals first than the Chiefs.
Yeah. All. Speaking on the Royals and the money front, yesterday, J.J. Piccolo and Q were talking about the upcoming team. And you and I heard the exact same thing. Let us play you the clip real quick and see if you heard it the same way as us. because there's a couple of interesting things for the Royals and where they go next and what steps they take next, I guess, as it relates to this. Carter Jensen obviously is on this team. Salvador Perez has a $13.5 million player option, but they made it sound like maybe not just the option.
We've already started those discussions. Obviously, there's an option that we can pick up, so I think it's safe to say that one way or another, Salvi will be in a Royals uniform in 26. What we do beyond that is still to be determined, but there are some things we still need to work through and talk about.
Sounds like they're considering maybe more than just picking up the player option, as in a multi-year extension?
That's the only other either way he's going to be in a Royals uniform.
So a multi-year extension, what's that?
Or a one-year extension?
But why would you need a one-year extension? You could just pick up the player option.
This is a really tough part, as in like 1 year beyond that, so 2 year. I thought you meant two in addition to the...
No.
I thought you were talking
three
total.
The option goes away. We're good. 2 years. We're deciding you to a two-year extension.
Good. I thought you meant two in addition to
No, I don't... 3 years would be... Nope.
So, okay, that's what I was going to ask. You think that that would be, like, what's the number of years in which we're like, you know, that's okay. Carter Jensen's 22. He'll be 23 in the middle of the season next year. But for half of the baseball season, he'll be 22 years old. So he's 22 years old. He'll play his 22, 23-year-old season behind Salvi, his 23, 24-year-old season behind Salvi, if they were to do a two-year deal. And then at 24 and a half years old, he'd be ready to be the full-time starter for the Royals, as in he catches 130 games, 140 games a year. And Salvador Perez is no longer a member of the Royals and is retired and has a statue out there in center field of the new stadium, ideally, outside of there. Like, all of those things seem plausible. I guess my question is are you playing... this is a real guessing game of father time. Gold, there was at least a third of this season this year where we thought it got him. Father time got him. Like, I mean, definitely thought that that was a possibility. I understand he ended up finishing as one of the best hitting catchers in baseball and had a really good offensive season again. So maybe I shouldn't think that way. Does he got two more years of catching at this rate? And I guess here's the truth. If they gave him a two-year extension, so this year and next year, or next year and the year after, they signed him up. The one thing I'd want guaranteed from the coaching staff is they are going to handle it like they were doing with Freddie Freeman last year. And Salvador Perez is only going to catch half the games. Because I think that that's how he keeps his hitting numbers up. And that's how you get Carter Jensen ready to take over the job in a couple of years when he has to do it full time. And they don't have Salvador Perez to lean on anymore after his illustrious career. I do love seeing him in the end of a Royals uniform, but I'm trying not to sacrifice that for winning.
Yeah, I don't know what the option or what the extension exactly would look like. But I think at this point in time for next season, as much as we saw in the small sample size of Carter Jensen and the Freddie Freeman role and all that kind of stuff, it wouldn't surprise me at the beginning of next year, Cody, if they had Salvi catching more at the beginning of the year than he did even this year, as you're still trying to get Carter Jensen fully for a full MLB season. Are they immediately going to give him the exact same role that Freddie Freeman had, you know, beginning on opening day? Some of that will be dictated by his bat and how productive he is. If he's hitting at a high rate or like he did in this, 21 games or something like that he played this year, then they will find a way to get him in the lineup like they would for anybody.
Yeah.
So that'll sort itself out. Look, Salvador Perez is a fan favorite. And as you said, is a legend in this town and is going to be in Cooperstown and all of that. I don't know anybody that's going to be upset about an extension. With any extension, there's risk come a year or so down the road. But they are, at this point in time, they're basically saying, if they sign an extension, they don't think that the clock is going to catch up to him yet.
I mean, the thing is, like, it hasn't hurt him. You know how rare it is to get through an entire contract gold for an aging player at an aging position and not regret it? They gave Salvador Perez a contract and gold. Seriously, at that time, we questioned if it was too much money. Is that too much money to get Salvador Perez, a player in his early 30s, who catches? And they've gotten every nickel. If they walked away on the option and didn't have to pay him another cent, like $1 million, I think, is the buyout option. They got every nickel of the contract out of Salvador Perez. The real question I guess I have for you, what's a number you can accept per year? Salvador Perez right now is the second highest paid catcher per year. He made $20 million per year over the course of his contract. Real Muto is the number one. He makes $23.8 million. There's a sizable gap to three. Sean Murphy makes $15 million. Mitch Garver makes $11.5 million. So you want to talk about a difference in pay. There's a massive step up from the fourth to the third highest paid, from the third to the second, and from the second to the first. Will he, 2 for 40? Would he take 2 for 35? The question I have for Salvador Perez is, do you want to win in the city and finish your career enough that you would do 2 for $30 for us? It's a raise on the option, which we can get you on a discount. Would you do 2 for $35? That's the number I would be looking at. 2 for $35. If he wanted a third-year option like this one, I'll give you another $15 million on the back end where I get to choose. But I'm not likely to pick that up, and I would just have to tell him that. But two for 35, 2 for $40.
I don't think the dollar amount is going to be like some outrageous. It's basically going to be very similar to what we're already seeing. I mean, given the age, I don't think it's going to go really up. It's more about extending the year if they do that. Remember, let me be clear. We played the Idokid. They didn't say for sure that's what they're going to do. They're exploring other options.
They're saying Salvador Perez is going to be a Royal. It's either via an extension.
Either they can't get an extension done or they just pick up the option. It sounds like they are willing to discuss an extension. That was why it was a little bit of a significant development. Not that he is going to be on the club next year, that there's actually a possibility that they want to ensure that he's on the club a year after next year as well, or beyond, I guess.
I mean,
ideally, you want to finish his career as a Royal. That'd be awesome, right? You probably will not see that for a Royals player ever again.
Not even for Bobby Wood Jr.
No,
it's very unlikely
because of
for
the financial
player.
Element of baseball. I mean, it's very rare.
What is he going to cost? I mean, legitimately.
Oh, I don't even want to think about that.
Don't
worry about that. We got 6 years. Stop or five, whatever.
Point.
Don't worry about that.
That's a good point.
Don't stress about
You're
that.
You're right, because I can't.
Don't worry about that,
dude. I can't. I don't even want to know because he's going to be free agent when he's like 31 or something. 30. He's going to get a very big check.
Yeah, again, I don't even want to explore this conversation.
He's going to get
Don't worry about that.
Very big check. Someone says from the 816, come on, Cody, Salvador Perez been underpaid his entire career. Give him market value. But here's the thing I will say about that. You're not wrong. He was underpaid for a huge chunk of his career. Twice in Salvador Perez's career, the Royals market corrected his deal to pay him more when they didn't have to. So twice, the organization gold, I think, did right by Salvador Perez by giving him more money, even though they didn't have to give him more money, and market corrected it. If they gave him 2 for $35, they'd be giving him more money again. He's only on books for $13.5 million this year. You give him $17.5 million per year, he's still getting a raise for this year, and you're paying him slightly below market value for year two. That, like, it can be paid both ways. Salvador Perez has been taken care of in his career. Has he been underpaid based on value? Yes. Have the Royals made that good in other ways? Also, yes.
I think anything under, $17 million a year is still a steal at this point for what you're getting production-wise.
Yeah. I'd take anything under 20 and probably be okay with
it. I don't think it's over 20. I don't. Given the age,
You start talking 2 for $50, and I might tell you, pick up the 13.5 million and live your life.
Exactly. If that's the number that it takes, then, okay, you always have the option, and you worry about that. And then you could also... Nothing prevents you, if you end up picking up the option and not doing an extension, if he has another great year, nothing prevents you from trying to work something out after that year, after 2026. Like, it doesn't mean that it's done forever.
Honestly, with Salvador Perez, isn't this the key candidate to Shohei Ohtani, this contract? Give him what he wants and just pay him for the next 20 years. He's got enough money. You can pay him.
Well, we're not talking about, it's not even the same stratosphere of money, though. There's no need to do that.
There's no need to defer. You're not, it's 20 million. Yeah, it's fair.
It's not like we're talking about 50 million a year or something. No, I mean, by the way,
you're
I know there's
going to
be. They're
going to
have
to do the next 30 years.
Cody's wanted to do, what do they call, what's the, Cody's wanted to clarify this thing out or whatever it's called or whatever.
I'm just saying, if there's a problem with it, figure it out. That's all.
Yeah.
They're going to have to Bobby Wood Jr. That's the Clarney payment. Hey, Bobby, do you mind if we pay you over the next 30 years? Because we were thinking the next 10 might be a little tight.
I think Clarney is a pay in four. How about pay in 20? Yeah.
Pay in four. Installments.
It's usually paying for installments. How about paying 200 installments,
I've never,
please? Thank
I've
you.
Never used.
I did. I've done before. It a few times. Yeah.
Although, in fairness, my
for trips, it's kind of nice. For like for a flight.
Oh yeah. Okay.
You know,
my parents certainly we didn't have a ton of money growing up. So my mom certainly had. I've been into and they've rented places from the Rent-A-Center place before.
Oh yeah. How is that?
It's not great. I mean, obviously they're charging you an absolutely astronomical interest rate at the time.
If somebody needs a couch, now.
At that time, I think it might've been for when my mom and my stepdad had gotten separated for a little bit, his entire apartment was essentially that, where you go in, then you get the dining room table and the couch Tell me what I pay a week.
People are texting in other ones. Yeah, there's other company names. Someone said Affirm. I've seen that one. Zip Pay. Those are, there's a bunch of them I've seen on the text line.
I've never used one of those.
So
Gold's closely watching the Major League Baseball game because he put a bet in.
No runs first inning.
Maybe it was two on, two out, and now there's two outs.
Well, two on, nobody out.
Oh, sorry, that's what I meant.
Did you see, we were in the middle of having a conversation. I wasn't going to interrupt. Did you see what should have been an out? The outfielder had a pretty routine fly ball and dropped it.
Oh, no, I missed
Disgusting
that.
Is what it was, Cody. But now
for somebody who has the no run first inning. Yeah.
And now the count is, again, you know.
You're going to have to sweat this one out. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to get off easy here. Tanner Bibee is going to make you.
I just need an out. I need another strike away for at least the top half of the inning.
Yeah. Still get through the bottom half. You'll figure that out. You also noticed something over college football on the weekend.
Yeah, I love this.
It really, you're ready for the NFL to adopt yet another plan.
I love this. You guys, if you've watched any college football this season, you've noticed specifically some of the SEC games, some of the ACC games.
You got through that first.
Yes, we did.
The top half.
To the bottom of the first we go. And that's the replay center, the command center that these conferences are letting the broadcast see and have communication. It's transparent. It was awesome on the Friday night Florida State Virginia game, which ended up being an epic ending and overtime and everything like that. But there was multiple times where they went to the ACC command center and you could hear the conversation, the official on the field and the officials, the officiating for the conference back in the replay center. It was transparent. I think it gets rid of some of the conspiracy theories. It lets us understand why they came to a certain conclusion on the call, what they're looking at on a perfect on a particular replay. I think this is something that every conference in the country will be doing by next year that can afford the system to do it. Some of the smaller conference is going to take more time. And the NFL, with the money they have, there is no reason in the next year or so, honestly, immediately, but they won't, should not be doing this as well. This is awesome for the fan. I think it will cut back on the Chiefs referee conspiracy crap we heard all of last season as well. If people can actually hear them talk out why they reviewed a call and this was a catch, or if you're going to have other penalties reviewable and things like this, this clears some of that up.
Yeah, I don't mind it, honestly. Even if you disagree with the logic, and this is the part that I think the NFL and other leagues care about too. It's more entertaining, Gold. Way more entertaining than standing around waiting for them to see what happens. Let's just take it at its face value at the very least. At least I get to hear in and be like, whoa, what do you mean he's bobbling it? I don't know. I get to argue with a hypothetical voice in addition to it if for some reason I don't. But if not, maybe they do. In your case, you said you listened to a call and you're like, that's a catch. And then they're describing it and you're like, oh, yeah, it kind of makes sense. I actually don't hate the logic of it. I think the biggest thing that has been holding this thing back, believe it or not, is the refs themselves. Historically, umpires and referees hate stuff like this because they think it makes them look bad. That somehow somebody in New York talking about a call that they got wrong makes them look bad for getting it wrong. Hey man, they're running 22 miles an hour. There's 22 of them on the field and you're trying to pay attention to 87 things. I don't blame you for missing it. I just want them to get it right. No one's coming down on you for getting it wrong unless you're just getting it wrong all the time, in which case, look inward. I think it has been more the referees or the umpire.
Probably.
Those are the people I actually think you have to convince, Gold. Not the fans.
They're not going to have much of a choice soon, though. Now that we're seeing this happen in college football and more of these conferences are doing it, people are going to expect to see it, and there's going to be more and more pressure for these conferences to do it. I love seeing it all weekend.
I don't know. Is there a union of college refs? Because there's a union of NFL refs.
I guarantee you there is, man. I bet it's by conference, but I bet there is.
Each conference employs their own officials.
So. I would assume so, but I wonder if there's...
I'll say this. They have agreements with the conferences about things.
Because I think that there's maybe less of a... There's more of a fight, I think, that NFL refs would give to Cody's point than maybe college refs.
There's not a single union for college,
but they all have agreements as groups to negotiate with conferences. That's why the ACC has.
I wonder if that has a role in why the NFL hasn't done it yet, or why it would take a longer period of time, because the NFL refs might, for the same reasons you're bringing up, Cody, be like,
why do you think ABS took so damn long to come around?
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's always going to be hard to convince people to change that stuff.
Sports Talk on 96.5 The Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Let's talk some NFL. Let's talk some Chiefs with Chiefs reporter Matt McMullen next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wish the camera was on during the break. Solo home run by the Guardians.
Did not win your bet?
Solo home run by the Guardians in the bottom of the first inning, of course. Yep. No, it wasn't the drop fly ball that got me in the first inning.
Yeah, they had two on, nobody out. That felt like your danger zone.
And it wasn't Jose Ramirez that hit a home run for the Guardians. No, some guy, Valera. Who the hell that is? Anyway, all right, Guardians up 1-0. Wild card action. Remember, the Guardians have to win today to keep their season alive. Let's talk a little Chiefs football. We've got Matt McMullen, Chiefs reporter for the Chiefs, joining us in studio. We were talking some baseball during the break as well, but let's talk some football. And much different feeling, of course, now than if we had you on a week ago or something like that. This offense, now you can start getting excited, it feels like, knowing what maybe is to come.
Yeah, first of all, what's up, guys? Glad to be here. This week's been fun already. You can feel the vibe in the city when the Chiefs play well, and that was obviously the case on Sunday. But yeah, you know, one thing that Mitch and I have been talking about is this is the team that we saw in training camp. And it's also the same team we saw in training camp last year. We knew the offense could be this, and we knew the defense could achieve what they've achieved as well. To see it all come to fruition on Sunday, like it did, was awesome. And especially against Baltimore. And I understand the Ravens have some injuries right now. It's still the Baltimore Ravens and was still a team playing, you know, for their season, just like we were in many regards. So to go out there and play as well as they did was pretty awesome. And now it's about just continuing that moving forward.
I do wonder, like, for them offensively, it's obviously they've got the upper potential of any of the offenses in the NFL when everybody returns. I don't think anybody would deny that really before, but certainly not now that they see Xavier Worthy back. It's just like the red zone stuff is always there and the short yardage stuff. And this year they're worse in third down. If it's not those, the underlying metrics are really good. So the question is, like, do Worthy and Rice help them in third down stuff too? Can they just improve? And does it help them in the red zone? It's not like those things I feel like are still unknowns in the sense that Rashee Rice doesn't have 50 games of NFL experience under his belt. He's got his rookie season and a couple of games last year. And Xavier Worthy has last season and a couple of games this year. So I still kind of want to see them as a unit so I can make a determination. I've never seen them on the field together when they're like, both weapons.
And we've never seen those two in Hollywood on the field together ever, that's what we were so excited about in training camp last year. Hopefully here soon enough, we'll have all three on the field at the same time and add in Taekwon as well, who's played really well through four games here. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I think Rashee changes everything for this offense just because he led the NFL in catches and receiving yards through three games last year. You could tell he was about to have like a monster season. And in so many ways, the offense was running through him. You add a player like that who was explosive and looked great in training camp. Like, it's not like he's coming off this injury where you don't know how he's going to look when he first comes back. I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, he was tremendous throughout the offseason training program and in camp. So I think he'll come back and hit the ground running. With Xavier, I think he helps in the red zone because of what we saw last year, where he's such a weapon in terms of
the speed.
Yeah, he can stretch the field horizontally and vertically, where you can swing the ball out to him like we saw against Cleveland and Pittsburgh last year and force a linebacker to make a play. I mean,
you got to be able to run in the red zone to score. Like, that's a long established idiom in the NFL. And to this point, the Chiefs can't run the ball well, or at least effectively every week. It doesn't mean they can't, but it's like that's like, maybe that is where Worthy gets the end around stuff and what you're saying in the speed can be there. But I do think that they're going to have to like run better as a team to be better in the red zone.
I think Xavier also makes things easier on the running backs, though, because whenever he's in the game, you have to respect his speed and what he can do. Particularly, we've seen him in the backfield a little bit during his career. Saw some of it last week against the Ravens, where what are they going to do with him? You know, and if it ends up just being a handoff to Kareem Hunt or Isaiah, you still had to account for Xavier for a minute on that snap. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Hopefully we'll see more production from the running back position here over the next handful of weeks. But we've made progress, I think, the Giants game and this last game against Baltimore. Much improved from that position. It wasn't Patrick Mahomes being the leading rusher 2 weeks in a row.
But three out of the first 4 weeks, it hasn't been a running back, which is
It was
weird.
Xavier last week.
It was Xavier,
Yeah,
he had the huge run, obviously. And they, like, honestly, I didn't think they were going to use him as much as they did. I didn't think they were going to hold him back, but I didn't think he'd be getting... I didn't think
he had
121
scrimmage yards.
Yeah, I didn't think the end-around screen game... I thought they'd work that in later, and they just use him as a receiver. But no, they're like, no, we'll just use him right away. It's fine. Here's all
the
stuff.
He said that's what he wanted too, right? He was talking after the game. He said that's what he wanted. He didn't want to be limited. And I think it's weird, Matt, you can speak to this more, but like with the dislocated shoulder, it's not like the injury is going to quote unquote get better throughout the year. So if you're limiting him now, there's no limit him now, unless you're, you know, it's later in the year when you want to save him for the playoffs or something. Otherwise, there's no point of limiting him now. The injury is the injury. It's not really getting better next week.
And it's not a leg injury. So I think a lot of times with players like this, when they have like a leg injury, you want to ease them into it. Like if it was like a hamstring or like a knee injury, it's not. I mean, he's the fastest player in the NFL, and that hasn't changed because of the injury. So yeah, I mean, you just throw him out there. And Coach Reed has always been this way. Like if you're available and in the game plan, you're going to play. And we saw it in that game where he didn't look limited at all, in my opinion.
I agree.
In many ways, it's the best game of his career. So
that's what's crazy about it as well. Yeah, it ended up being one of the better performances we've seen from Xavier Worthy and obviously a Chiefs uniform. We have Matt McMullen hanging out with us in studio here on Cody and Gold. Defensively, I don't think enough focus has been made on Noel Williams and also Jalen Watson. We know what Trent McDuffie is, right? He's one of the best corners in football. Everybody talks about, of course, what they're getting from their linebackers right now after Leo Chanel had an incredible interception. But Noel Williams is still a new name for Chiefs fans. And then you got Jalen Watson, who I just think is still underappreciated. When he's healthy, he's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is last year he was injured. And he was really good to start the season last year, got hurt, really admirably fought through his rehab to make it back for the playoff run. But then this year he's totally healthy and he's ready to go. And we've seen that. I mean, Jalen's been great. Noel Williams has been very exciting too. That rep he had against D-Hop down the sideline last week. Yeah, he's physical and he's not afraid of whoever the receiver is. I mean, that's DeAndre Hopkins you're going up against and he wasn't intimidated
and he's pretty
by
good
him at all.
Physical contested catches.
He's one of the best contested catchers in NFL history, yeah. Right? So anyway, yeah,
the
Noel
first
3 weeks
certainly excited. Made it look like he could still do that.
Yeah, I think he can. But anyway, you know, Christian Fulton not being available has been disappointing as he kind of deals with his injuries, but it creates opportunities where Noel Williams has stepped in and now you kind of know what he can do. And I'm excited about Noel moving forward. And it's one of those ironic things where hopefully Christian Fulton is back here soon, but later in the year, you can rely on Noel because of what you saw early in the season when he had to go in there and play. It's a similar deal on offense with Tyquan Thornton, where does Tyquan emerge like he has if he didn't have to step in there and get those snaps when Xavier Worthy was out? Who knows? It's kind of an ironic thing where maybe it's a positive that Xavier didn't play for a couple of weeks.
So he feels like he's going to comfortably slide into the Justin Watson role.
And that's a huge role to fill, right? And I think he's done a great
job
of it.
He's an important player, yeah.
I mean, because if you're the defense and you have to account for, in a couple weeks, Rashee and Xavier and Hollywood Brown, well, Tyquan Thornton is going to get a one-on-one opportunity against a player who is probably slower than him. So
I don't
think
they're going to throw to him any short of like 20 yards down the field for the next, like, once Rice is back, just assume if he's targeted, it's 20-plus yards down. And that's what they did with Justin Watson for a long time. I think people, it's a weird thing to say, but for like 2 years maybe in a row, Justin Watson was their best big play guy.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's not you can take that as a compliment or not,
that's
but like,
I
mean,
he
was their best big play guy in the sense that he was good from 20 to 25. He was good in that mid range where they didn't have that at all. Really last year, they didn't have a mid range game, right? They couldn't play in those in-betweens. They could get you short or occasionally they could get you deep, but they couldn't do anything in between. I think that Tyquan's going to fit in nicely in that role. I've been happy with Tyquan because he was a massive bust in New England. I mentioned it was comparable to Sky Moore. And the fact that he's playing at this level suggests that they're getting something out of a guy whose time in New England, they weren't even putting him on the field at the end, right? I mean, they didn't want him to play at the end. That team had no one to throw to for a good chunk of the year last year.
And I mean, credit to him for making the most of his opportunity, right? He's averaging 18 yards per catch right now. That's third best in the NFL.
We were going through his pacing stats for the season, and he's on pace for 13 touchdowns.
All okay. Right.
Like, I don't know if that's going to happen, but still, it's kind of fun to look at some of those particular numbers. I'll be interested to see. I know, Cody, you were saying when Rice is back, is it just going to strictly be a deep threat thing? And maybe it will. I guess what was encouraging is at least this past week, is one catch was a red zone target. That's not like, and that maybe that won't happen all that often, but if he can also be a red zone threat as much as he is, hey, we're going to try to stretch the field. Well, then he becomes that much more valuable, of course, for the offense.
And that was a tough catch too.
I mean, impressive.
That was a rocket.
I mean, frankly, two of his last three catches he's made have been awfully impressive catches.
And, you know, hopefully we get to the point here when everyone's healthy and back where it doesn't really matter who's stepping up and getting the numbers as long as the offense is humming and working down the field, which is what I think it can be. and we saw it in many ways against Baltimore. Just imagine Rashee Rice added to that offense.
I kind of love when you can tell. Everyone can tell when Mahomes is like feeling it.
Oh yeah.
The throw to Tyquan and then the one in between two defenders where you're like, there's no window to throw a pass. That's when he's feeling it a little bit. He's fading back on 1 foot, throwing it to Kelsey.
That was
like
a great
you
pass.
Can always tell when he's just like, oh yeah, okay, we're loose again. And he's just making like throws that don't, that shouldn't be easy, that he makes look easy. I felt like we hadn't seen that in Patrick in too long. You see it in the playoffs, you always get a taste of it, but because their offense had to work so hard the last couple of years, it was a game where they didn't have to work hard at all. He was just feeling loose and making throws.
Go back and watch the touchdown to Hollywood. So I'm pretty sure Hollywood was like his third read on that play, but that play was a great example of how the offense on Sunday.
That was the one between the two defenders.
Well, it was the one in the corner of the end zone.
Oh,
where
no,
it was fourth and one.
Yep.
It reminded me so much of the 2022 offense because it was a fourth and one play call. Xavier was running parallel with the sticks, but he was covered. That play is never covered. Well, it was covered on that instance. The second level receiver was covered as well. And, you know, maybe earlier this year you watch that and you say, oh man, they're not going to get the first down. Well, Hollywood was wide open in the back of the end zone and Mahomes found him for a touchdown. Not only do you move the chains, you score. That's the kind of play right there where the Ravens defense in so many ways did everything right. They covered the sticks. They covered the second level receiver. You forgot about Hollywood behind you. That's the kind of offense I think that we can be.
I hope that it turns into that. Honestly, I'm ready for the 50 touchdown, 5,000 yard offense. Well, I'm greedy.
Yes, yes.
Well, I'm greedy. I like it's more fun.
Well,
offense is fun.
Of course.
It's not a knock on Spags. He must know this too. Offense is fun. People like watching it. And look, he's the best defensive coordinator in the NFL.
Not even close.
I would make
not even close.
I think by the end of this, the same as we push for Creed, we're gonna have to like beg the NFL to put him in the Hall of Fame, even though there's no assistant coaches in the Hall of Fame. But if you're the standout, it's like the punter thing. If you're the standout example of I've won more rings than any assistant coach in history, well, then I think you should get your place, you know.
I think that's fair.
I tried to get a bronze statue made. They weren't interested.
Hmm.
I tried with laser eyes. I wanted like
like the
red
shirts.
Eye. Yeah, that, but in an actual
Textline, not bronze. A fan of that. They consistently said it's the worst idea.
It was going to cost $20,000 or $30,000. I thought worth it.
Okay.
But I wanted to personally deliver it to Spags.
Were you going to fund this yourself?
Yeah, we were gonna crowdsource.
Okay,
right?
and then most people said no chance.
Grassroots.
So
we were gonna grassroots this effort. Well, I don't have $30,000, so it's gonna have to be grassroots effort.
Okay, you know,
I don't think my wife would approve of me taking a loan against my retirement to fund.
I don't
statue.
Think that'd be
for
smart,
a passion
Cody.
Project.
I don't think.
I don't think that would be a great idea.
Statue with what red
do,
eyes,
Matt. What do you make of the AFC West right now? 4 weeks through the season, the Chargers, of course, get their first loss of the year. Raiders look more like the Raiders every week, and the Broncos, I thought, got their offense going again on Monday night.
Yeah, well, I think the world looks a whole lot different this week than it did maybe on Sunday morning. This is why it's a long season, and I never lost faith in this team or thought that the division race was over by any means. Football's hard, and yeah, the Chargers have played great so far, but you go to New York, it's a long flight for them, and you run into a player making his first ever start. He has nothing to lose, and he plays really well.
Flight's hurt.
Yeah, yeah. It's difficult when you don't have your best protectors when you're facing a pass rush like that. But anyway, that was a big swing right there. And then I was telling Mitch when we were watching that Chargers game, if we can find a way to win today, like talk about a swing in the division, right? And I mean, there's a world where you can be tied with the Chargers going into week
six. They got the Commanders and Jaden Daniels practicing again. So
yeah. I also think it was a net zero, essentially, the second they lost to the Giants and the Chiefs won, because you'll still play them.
Yeah.
So you're back to even. Now you just got to play. You don't have to play way better than them. You just have to play one game better than them the rest of the way and beat them in the game in which you would play them. That's not like, okay, so I got 12 other games and beat them in the other one. Okay, they go, let's say in the 12, they go 8-4. You got to go 9-3. It took a lot of the get, because if it had gone the other way, the division's over, in my opinion.
I mean, and the Broncos, the of course, factor into this, too, because Broncos have the same record as the Chiefs, so I get what you're saying.
I just don't think the Broncos are winning the division.
Enough. Fair enough.
Like, I understand. I think it's a two-horse race in that, but that might just be because Bo Nix, up until last week, has not looked exactly dangerous, although the Broncos' defense looks as good. Might have the best pass rush in the NFL. But, like, I don't know. Bo Nix winning this division? That's my issue.
Well,
like, it doesn't pass the smell test.
I think last year what we saw for him was obviously impressive. I don't think the ceiling is as high for him as some of the other quarterbacks and as a Justin Herbert, for example, or somebody, even though Herbert hasn't won in the postseason and gets criticized. I think his ceiling is still much higher than Bo Nix. I think there's more limitations there. But with Sean Payton in that system, Broncos are more than capable of winning 10-plus games again this season.
I think that's totally fair. And, you know, there's more competition in the division, which is a good thing in the long run. I think all these divisional games are going to be pretty intense. And even against the Raiders, you know, they have the turnover issues. But Ashton Jeanty having his first breakout game last week, rushed for almost 140 yards. He's a good player. And Brock Bauer is obviously a very good player. So those divisional games are going to be tough. The thing is, the Chiefs plan for these things. The Chiefs plan for divisional matchups in May and in the spring. And the first goal every single year is winning the AFC West. It won't be easy this year. Like, it's never easy. We always look back on the division titles and say, like, oh, the Chiefs just rolled
four games.
But, you know, it's not always easy. Think about 2023. The Chiefs were 9-6 at one point. Think about 2021. The Chiefs were 1-2 to begin the year, 3-4. Didn't get over 500 till week 9 that season.
What year was it that they were in a virtual tie with the Raiders? They played each other for the division. They ended up winning.
2016. 2016.
Later in the season, and they still ended up winning the division by like 3 or 4 games. It wasn't close in the end. Yeah. That game was for the lead in the division.
Well, so that one actually was 2021, I think. But 2016, both teams finished 12-4, but the Chiefs had the tiebreaker over the Raiders. So anyway, we look back on it like it's always easy. It's hard to win the division. I will tell you, if the Chiefs can find a way to win the division this year, which would be a 10th in a row, I will be enjoying that AFC West Champions hat more than maybe I have in the past.
Oh. Do you have like on a display? How do you do it?
Matt tweets out all the hats.
Yeah, I know. I got all the hats.
Do you display them or do they sit in a closet?
I am married, so they're not just displayed in my home. They're currently in a bag underneath my desk at work. Yeah, but I love pulling those things out whenever we win something.
Yeah, so it's funny. We've had the convo before because we've gotten spoiled with the AFC West titles, and now obviously it's about Super Bowls and everything. But you know, there was a point in time where you were rushing out to buy the hats, and everybody was, and T-shirts and all that.
AFC West.
I will say, if they get their 10th and the design has something that's not just the one that every team has for winning the division that year. If there's this divisional champ shirt that says like 10X or whatever, I'll buy that one because that's pretty cool. 10, like 10 straight or something. Like that one I will buy. Otherwise, I haven't bought an AFC West one in a while. We've been spoiled.
So many times it feels like I get stuck in the conversation. Like if you're not going to win the division this year, where the Chiefs start 0-2, you start 2-0, you start 3-0, they start, you know, like if you're not winning it now, when are you going to steal it away? You have a top defense. You had a better record going into it. You had the edge. You beat them. You won 3 divisional games to start the year. Like this is your moment if you're the Chargers. And every time they fall up short, it feels like it's kind of tough in there. On the opposite end, let's talk about the game coming up on Monday. What do you make of the Jags? We know their schedule is a bit deceiving in the sense that they haven't played a murderer's row through 4 games. Although we both agree their most recent win is their most impressive on the year. I buy their defense, I think. I wasn't expecting it to be good. I thought Liam Cohen would make the offense better. The defense has people. I think I do buy them as they'll be kind of stodgy most of the year. I'm just trying to decide how much of that is opponent. Are they really a top 5 defense? Are they more like the 10th to 12th best and opponents played a factor?
Well, the most important stat going into this game is takeaways. They have 13 takeaways this year. That's most of any team in the NFL. For context, they had 9 all of last season.
Wait, for real?
They had 9 takeaways all of last year, dead last
season. Liam Cohen teach him how to strip a football?
So, you know, there's an element of randomness, an element of skill. Regardless, the number one thing for the Chiefs in this game is you can't turn the ball over. Fortunately, they've been very good about that, knock on wood, so far this season. But look at some of the Jags' offensive drives. They have the most drives that have begun in opponent territory of any team in the NFL. Oh, okay. 9 of them.
They're still 41 not a very good points. Offensive team. That's weird.
Well, they have 41 points off of takeaways this year. That's like 40% of their overall total. So that's not taking anything away from their offense, but they've had the benefit of starting a lot of times on the opponent's side of the 50-yard line. Yeah, and that makes it easier. So for the Chiefs in this game, you can't make it any easier on Jacksonville because the main reason they're 3-1 right now is they've been very opportunistic and taken advantage of those turnovers.
I was going to say, because Brian Thomas is off to a slow start. And I say that and, you know, watch, he'll have his best game of the year or something. But
they've been really good against number one wide receiver. So it'd be a weird time for Brian Thomas to go off.
It would, but he's been off to a slow start. ETN's been awesome. We were talking about the turnovers earlier too, Matt. It's just, it's kind of crazy to look at their turnover differential. And when Liam Cohen was hired, and it still can be this way by the end of the year, but everybody thought, get Trevor Lawrence going, right? Like, and he's been okay. He's just fine is how I would describe the start of his season, maybe even below average so far this year.
I think he's simplified things for that offense because they're running the ball a ton, like you said. It's interesting with ETN because you have a first-round running back, a guy that had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons to begin his career, and then everyone kind of forgot about him. Just a weird year last year, but now he's back. I think he's even better now than he's ever been. He's averaging over 6 yards per carry.
He's healthy.
And he looks like it, right? He has the most yards per attempt before contact of any player in the NFL right now. There's a whole bunch of stats like this on Travis Etienne. So he is one of the primary reasons they've been so successful. They're averaging like 6 yards per rush on first down this year. So the first key for the Chiefs defensively is don't let Travis Etienne have a big day. The second thing with Lawrence is it's all stuff in the short intermediate area of the field, because he always has one of the fastest average times to throw in terms of his dropback time. It's that way this year too. He's second in the NFL behind only Aaron Rodgers. So it's like a lightning quick dropback. That's why he's the least sacked quarterback in the league. There's no time to get there. So you have to cover his first read. They're not throwing the ball deep at all. He has 11 attempts of 20 or more air yards and only completed one of them. He has the most attempts of any quarterback in the league in terms of between 10 and 19 yards. So cover his first read, stop the run, make him hold on to the ball for longer than 2.5 seconds.
Has that been one of the surprising things about Patrick Mahomes' season? You mentioned the time to throw. Patrick Mahomes getting rid of the ball really quick, too. That's uncommon for them.
I would argue that last year, that was kind of the plan with Rashee. Think about like the game against Baltimore and how quickly he was getting rid of the football to both Xavier and Rashee. Because Rashee is almost an extension of the run game in so many ways. It's like quick throws over the middle and then let him be kind of like a running back after the catch. That's how the front office described him when they first got him, because he's so good after the catch. I think that was kind of the idea, because it's so hard to stop that. And we're seeing some of it now, and it's working, because you have that quick game, but then also with Xavier running down the field, you can have the deep passing element as well. Like, I loved it last week when they did basically the same play to Xavier twice in a row. It worked the first time, didn't work the second time. Just keep doing it, because that opens up the middle of the field, and then players like Juju, Rashee once he's back, and Travis Kelce, Jalen Royals, I think, can play that role. They can eat over the middle of the field.
Royals is going to end up like, and I hope he has some factor. This feels like, with the amount of weapons they have, the most redshirt year of redshirt years. You are right now the ninth receiving option. So, you're going to have to, every target you get is going to have to be earned. You're behind five wide receivers, a couple of running backs, a couple of tight ends. You're behind Noah Gray, who's
special teams opportunities seems like the best spot for him.
Yeah. But also a good problem to have, I'd
no
say.
No doubt.
Because it's a long season.
Chiefs, sure, develop him. That's fine.
I mean, we joke around, but you haven't had Hollywood and Xavier and Rashee ever on the field at the same time. You want to have other guys who can step in there and play. And that's why Juju has been so valuable to this team.
Yeah, he's been a nice player.
Yeah, he has. I mean, I think Juju is the healthiest he's been in years. He's motivated. He looks explosive. He looks good. And has helped this team win so far. Would have had two touchdowns last week if that on the first drive, the pass wasn't tipped at the line of scrimmage. He was wide open. That was going to be a sick throw by Mahomes too.
Why are they tipping more balls at the line of scrimmage this year? Is that an anomaly?
I think there's an element of randomness in there where you have some defensive tackles or 6'7", you know.
I think some of that might also just be you have a young left side of the offensive line, and maybe they haven't been coached. They're learning a lot of things, and maybe making sure the defender's arms are down is not the thing that they've picked up on first. I don't know.
I can dig into that one.
I am curious. They're having maybe the stats are it feels like he's having a significantly higher number of passes tipped.
It does feel that way.
To. I don't know if it is.
I can't.
It does feel that way.
I'll be honest. I don't know why. I think it just could be kind of random, but hopefully it evens out over the course of the year.
We got Matt McMullen hanging out with us here on 96.5 The Fan. Just elsewhere in the NFL, you obviously follow the league. We were talking Chiefs, but just wanted to get your perspective on what we're seeing across the league right now. In particular, an AFC that... Right now, it sure seems like we're trending towards, by the end of it, Chiefs and Bills are going to be, the two top teams again with Baltimore's injury luck right now. And we already talked about the Chargers a little bit. Do you look at the Steelers or Colts and say, all right, those are teams that can surprise people and will be a true threat? Like, the Colts are probably going to end up being a playoff team. I'm not 100% convinced they're winning the division yet. I actually think the Jags will get the offense going. Hopefully not this week. But that's who I think ends up winning the division. But there's a chance that both the Colts and Steelers, I guess, could be division winners.
Well, Steelers defense is awesome, obviously. And Aaron Rodgers has been really good for them. So with Baltimore's situation with the injuries and with Lamar's injury situation, the Steelers have a real shot at that division.
They got to be the heavy favorite.
We'll see how it plays out. But they got a real shot, especially with Burrow getting hurt and the Bengals kind of being a non-factor in that. It's interesting. It's funny how much things can change in a matter of weeks, And
dude, this week, Cooper Rush and Dylan Gabriel and Jake Browning are going to start as the other quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Ravens are still the favorite to win the division.
Ravens are... Okay, well...
Well, if they can get
I know you can't bet
healthy,
that, but I'm about to. It's going to be on the Steelers to win the division.
So we'll see with that one. I think I buy into the Steelers. The Colts are interesting. the Colts have been playing a lot when we've been playing, so I haven't been able to watch them much.
Fair.
This weekend will be nice because I can actually watch like some other games on Sunday once we get to Jacksonville. And looking forward to watching the Colts because they're playing the Raiders, right?
Yeah. I keep waiting for the clock to strike midnight on them, and it hasn't. So like once you get deep enough, a few more weeks into it, and they keep playing like this, then I'll fully believe it.
Yeah.
4 weeks. I've watched like the Saints last year get hot for 3 weeks and kind of look
this
like
this is realer than, you know, this is more.
I agree that it's more likely to be real because they have actual weapons to go with it. But there is like a 4 weeks isn't enough to make me believe Danny Dimes or Indiana Jones is going to.
Is that his nickname now?
Indiana Jones is a much better nickname. That's a great nickname.
I think it's great.
I don't think that, like, I just want to see it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Determination.
Having Jonathan Taylor certainly helps. And I think Shane Steichen's a really good coach. I mean, people forget Gardner Minshew almost got the Colts to the playoffs under Steichen a couple years ago. So we'll see. It is a long year, though.
That's the thing about, like, sometimes I don't understand, like, a market versus – this goes back to, like, Nagy. People talk about Nagy like it just went horribly in Chicago. I'm like, he took you to the playoffs twice. And he had no one at quarterback. What else did you want Nagy to do in the time he was in Chicago? Like, I don't know.
I'm with you on that one. I think his entire Chicago run is vastly underappreciated for how successful they were with the roster.
Maybe they
that
like
they
it
had.
Better with Eberflus run after.
I think Coach Nagy did an awesome job in Chicago. And like you said, getting that team to the playoffs two out of his 4 years, winning Coach of the Year 1 year with Mitch Trubisky at quarterback, who we've seen now as a career backup. I think he deserves way more credit for
what
he did
there.
That's
the biggest piece of evidence right there is that just asking you, who was the quarterback? Okay. Conversation's over at that point in time for me. Matt, good to see you, man. Matt McMullen of the Chiefs joining us in studio. Up next, we're going to talk with Josh Klingler. He'll also be in Jacksonville. He'll be on the sideline. We'll get his thoughts on the city, too, based on our earlier conversation next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.